Access number 29047, Mr. Len Townend, Reel 3. Now, you said there was another terrible job you had while you were with 51 Squadron.
This game was basically picking up aircraft that crashed. Now, while I was at 21 Squadron, I can't remember the exact... That's 51 Squadron, not 21, 51 Squadron. I can't remember the exact details. I don't remember the number. But we'll say we lost 20 aircraft while I was there. And only 8 of them were on operations. The rest were crashed around the Yorkshire countryside. And that was our job to go and pick these up. Well, this, of course, was the same sort of problem.
Now, what was causing all these crashes?
Bad pilot training or things of this nature. I mean, for instance, can you tell me, this must be in the record book somewhere, can you tell me what makes a pilot fly into the bloody church tower at Selby? What makes him hit a railway man's hut on the flipping railway? And things like this. The one I saw quite regular, no, regular's too big, too strong word. The one I saw several times was taking off and going off at too big an angle and stalling and coming straight back in. And this was just poor pilot training. They just went under-trained, these guys were. They were short of pilots. It's the old story. It was in the First World War, it was exactly the same. In the Second, it was just the same again. The pilot, they were losing pilots at such a range that they were there, and it certainly was poor training.
And again, it's an unpleasant question, but clearing up the wrecks, I presume.
Exactly, it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. There's nobody else to do it.
Was it only the bodies you were retrieving, or would you be retrieving the guns?
We never retrieved bodies. That wasn't necessary. If the body was safe, the ambulance people did that. See, the medics did it.
So what were you doing? The
bits that were not retrievable. You know, a leg and arm and a bit like these and bits. It was just a case of picking them out.
Would you also be picking up like the things that were broken, like the machine guns are removable, you know?
Well,
would you take them away or would somebody
again, you see, it's a bit of a organised do. Any ammunition or anything like that is taken out by the armourers first before we were allowed to get there, because this was bloody dangerous, and it was the armourers that used to go in first. The medics first, the armourers second.
So you then went up to...
I'd pick up the rest of the rubbish.
These aren't bodies, these are
yeah.
bits of bodies and rubbish. From bodies.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, yeah.
So, well, that's another unpleasant part of the job. Anything else, because you're still, as you said before, you're not really anything, are you?
No, I'm still, I'm just a young lad that's gone into the deep end now. That's all it amounts to. The other thing, the only other thing, it's 51 Squadron, that they were taking a hammer in, Halifax isn't, and Lancaster, I presume, I don't think Lancaster's have gone into it yet. But Halifax were taking a hammer in because they were getting shot down. One of the biggest programs I assisted in is that they, to make them go faster, they took one of the gun turrets out.
Now, how did you help with that?
Well, just again, it's just a body, lifting things, you know, pushing and shoving and heaving.
Which gun turret were you removing, if you see what I mean? Is it the... up the middle or
Well, you just take the middle top out because it gave it a lot more.
The top one, doesn't
yeah, that you that can remember, leave, just leave the tail in Charlie. And putting armour plating over the engines and things like that, armour plating around the pilot's area and all this. And in fact, I fitted a lot of the armour plating, even though it was nothing to it. It was just a simple job. It was just a case of...
Did it fit round it?
Well, the armour on the above the engines just was a flat sheet of armour that went across the engines, across the top, and you just put bolts through the places.
So it was actually above the sort of the skin, if you like, of the
aeroplane. Oh no, it's inside the cowlings, which is the skin, but it was underneath, just across the top of the engine, and the bits around the pilot as well. They were bolted bits to the seats and things like this. It was just body armour that were trying to help them out. I don't know how effective it was. I wouldn't know. I just don't know.
Now, one thing I should have asked you earlier is what did you think of the Merlin engine, or were you too inexperienced to have any thoughts about it?
I was inexperienced, but I thought the Merlin engine was marvellous.
Now, why was it? Because it's got a really good
Don't know why. We know the Merlin. This is the Merlin. I mean, I can remember the fact that lots of the engines, because, of course, I used to have, again, it only pure, I know nothing about it. I was purely and simply a guy with a set of muscles to lift things. we used to, there was a lot of Packard engines made by Packard in America coming over as replacement engines, and we used to have to do checks on these. Again, not me, I used to assist, and we used to find lots of things wrong with these, hadn't been done right, and we used to, the Rolls-Royce Merlin was all right, Packard engines were crap, you know. I don't think there's any justification in that, but I'm British, I'm English, and I really, really am, and still am.
So yeah. you just felt, it was your impression that Merlin, yeah. Its reputation was a reliability then?
Yeah, it was, which, when I think about it, it was a reliable engine, but when you think in terms of fact it could only last 200 or 300 hours before it flipping well packed in, it was just over revved.
Now, anything else about 51 Squadron? I mean, what would you do? You know, it sounds like you were quite busy. A lot of training on the job, in a sense.
Yeah.
Anything else happened? Were there any other stories?
No, not really. Just odd, stupid little things. By
such as
coming, all the load of the lads coming back for a dance, and the truck went in the flipping ditch, and obviously one had killed several of them, and that sort of thing.
They were actually killed.
Yeah.
Were you in the truck? Or did
No. I don't even see it. I would just. I mean, for all I know, it may have been a story, but I don't think it was. Poor old farmer gave us a lift. Where were kids getting a lift somewhere? Probably in the local village or the pub. I do remember getting drunk in the pub. he gave us the lift, and we all piled in, and we broke his back axle. There's so much worse, and I really did feel sorry for him, giving us his lift, and the bloody weight of him broke his bloody truck. There was nothing we could do about it. No, oh dear.
So where would you go to the pubs? I
honestly can't remember. There was a little village nearby that we used. I can remember going to the pub there.
How did they treat you in the pubs? You know, you arrive, you're not air crew, but you're RAF, you're ground crew.
They don't know the difference. And what's more, it's not to my shame, it's life. We used to pretend we were. Why not?
Is that how would they treat you? Would they treat you to a drink? I presume
it's yes, pretty yes, friendly. They were very friendly, this is it. As I say, like the old deer that used to give us toast on the other side of the airfield. I've been thinking about it since, you know. Poor old days, you probably haven't got as much bread yourself, but it was always good for a slice of toast when you're on guard over there.
So generally you got on well with the civilians?
Oh, the civilians are right, yeah.
Now, what happens next? And you weren't there long, 3 months?
No, I wasn't there very long at all, but then I went to St Athens. Not St Athens. Was it St Athens? Did it say that? Yeah, St Athens.
It says Locking.
Locking, that's right. Locking is in, not St Athens, stupid, that was much later in life. Yeah, Locking this, Western Supermare.
Yeah. Now, what is Locking? What's that? It says second STT. Now, I don't know
School of Technical Training.
I should have realised. Now, what happens here then?
I was trained as a flight mechanic now.
Now, what flight is mechanic the process engines. Of being changed on a flight, you know?
Well, you start off by being taught how to handle tools, how to cut metal, how to drill holes, all the basic engineering principles. And then you go through
this tool training. It's not easy, some of the things that, and you know, I don't know which tools were you particularly doing.
Filing, drilling, milling, all of the usual engineering things. But of course, it was only basic.
Now, were they giving you trade tests, or were they giving you tests?
Oh yeah, no, you had tests all the way. You had a trade test at the end. You had to pass the trade test before you could become a mechanic.
What sort of tests for the tool? I mean, like filing, you have to file a purpose.
Oh, that was that simple. You got a test piece, and you had this particular test. I can remember it quite clearly. My test piece. You had to file it flat, then scrape it. You know about engineering. You know what a scraper is,
right?
Well, a file, which is a rough. So you had to file it flat, right? And then you had to get a absolute top surface by scraping it. There's a little scraper, you just scrape little bits of metal off, which is supposed to make it, you know, oil-proof and waterproof and all the rest of it. And then you drill a certain number of holes in it, and you ream the holes to make sure you got the holes the right size. And you tap threads in them so you can put screws in them. These are all the little test pieces. So.
And you did okay.
I was good at that. That was my forte.
And you'd enjoyed engineering. I mean, that's what you'd wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
and
so that's learning to use the tools. What's the next stage of the course?
Well, learning all about the engine.
Now, so is this theoretical engine? I mean, did the team...
Well, there are engines there at the school, and you take bits off. And
now,
do
which
this.
Do you do first, the practical or the
theoretical? Always.
Tell me about the theoretical training. How detailed was it? What are you learning? Are you learning how engines work, or just these engines?
You've got to learn how to start with how a basic engine works. That's it, with carburation, how you get the spark and all of this sort of thing.
So it's how the parts of the engine
fit together. And then you learn taking bits off the engine, see what it's like and all the rest of it. You learn the engine, the propellers. The most frightening one I did, and I never ever did it again in the Air Force after I went there, because it was a bit dated. You see, at one time you start all aircraft by swinging the propeller. You must have seen films of this where you swing the prop, so we had to be taught how to do that, but I never ever had to do it in the Air Force.
How bad was it? Because it's dangerous.
It is dangerous if you do it wrong, and because of it had this thing about it was dangerous, so it was also a bit, you know,
timid.
You were a bit timid that you were going to chop your bloody head off with it.
Which engine was it on, the propeller?
This was on a Gypsy Moth, I think, or
was it actually on an airplane?
Oh yes, it was on the aircraft. Yeah.
And you manage it?
Oh yeah, I did that quite well.
Is there a knack to it? What is the knack of doing it without losing your head or arm or whatever?
Have you ever had a car where you swing it? Well, it's the same knack, and it's a propeller. You haven't got a starting handle. It's exactly the same thing. You bring it round. I mean, I can remember it exactly. You've got two magnetos in the Mustang. You switch one magneto off. You only use the one. Then you come round, and you can feel the compression in the cylinder. Then you say, contact. You switch the other one on. Bang. And that, it fires. If it don't fire, you have another go. It is just one of these things. But I've never ever done it since the training.
Now, what makes mention of Gypsy Miner and Bristol Pegasus here?
They were the two engines. Miner, Gypsy, and the Pegasus.
They're the ones you're working on, the practical engine training.
Yeah.
Anything particular about them, or
no?
Now, we've got learning to string the propeller, you've got learning to use your tools, you've got your test pieces, you've got your theoretical and practical engine training. Anything else?
The other thing is, airfield handling. You have to learn how to marshal aircraft and what to do when you're pushing aircraft and lifting them, and how you couldn't stomp on them with your hobnail boots and things like this. Just general handling, refueling, reoiling and this sort of thing. Got to know all the theories of this.
And refueling, I mean, tell us about that, because that's a dangerous point.
It's no different than refueling your car.
It really is just as simple.
There's a filler cap on the top of the wing, or four or five filler caps, depending on how it is, and you just bung the hose in, and that's it. That's all there is to it.
So there's no mystique.
No.
Anything else?
The only other thing about it is that you never ever use the aircraft gauges to fill it, because they're always inaccurate, or they could be. So you always use a dipstick. You must always, all through my life, when I got any lads working under me, I used to go absolutely ape if I saw them looking at the gauges and not using a dipstick. That bloody dipstick.
I presume, because in the end, using the gauges is lazy.
It's lazy
and dangerous.
It's dangerous. I mean, probably nowadays it's not so dangerous, but in those days it was nothing at all unusual for a petrol gauge to be out. So
if one was out, would you report it as out?
So you couldn't fly with it.
But you wouldn't presumably be able to fix it, or was that part of your?
No, I wasn't an instrument fitter. Then later, when I got later in life, yes.
So, anything else you want to tell us? I know we're going into the training quite a bit.
No,
but
it's fair enough.
Quite unusual.
No, I don't think there's anything else.
How were you assessed? I mean, you've mentioned the test pieces, but were you being tested all the time? Or
you're being tested at each phase, and then at the end you had the test. You had to make the practical piece, and you had to do a theory paper, in those days, they, oh yes, it was then. You know what a ballot paper is? Oh, well, it's multiple choice, they call it now. Right. You had a multiple choice, and then you had a verbal. People that, you know, the instructor, in fact, I used to do a lot of that later on. I used to teach all these young lads, used to hate me.
And how did you manage at these tests? I mean, the stages of the test?
I passed out as an LAC, which was what you didn't normally pass out as an LAC. No, passed out as an AC1. Don't be clever, lad. Yeah, AC2 as the lower. If you got high enough, might have got AC1.
So you did well?
Yeah. I've always done well. I've always been proud of my engineering abilities.
So you enjoyed it as much as you thought?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
Now, unless there's anything else about locking, your next thing is that you're there from March to, well, looks like August, July, August, anyway. And then you go to Helensburgh.
Yeah. Now, the only other thing about locking is where I met my first girlfriend.
Right. So tell us about Helensburgh.
Sorry to come back at you on that. I must say that I met my first girlfriend. Nowadays, no arguing about it. First girlfriend, you expect to sleep with them. In those days, there was no chance. No, very unusual. You did that as a girlfriend, that was it. You didn't. I mean, later on, probably been there, might have done, but it was not normal for sex to involve in a friendship. And
where did you meet her?
Where did I meet her? I honestly don't remember. I know we took her out several Sundays, or rather, she took me out. That's a very nice days out, kissing and cuddling, but we never went any further. In fact, I had her for a long while. Not had her, that's the wrong word these days. I was with her for most of the way through the war. She used to write to me everything.
Now, so the next thing, you're posted to a very interesting posting, really.
Marine Aircraft Experimental Establishment.
And that's at Helensburgh. I don't know where Helensburgh is.
Just up the Clyde.
So it's near Glasgow.
Boom, boom, boom. Do you know, have you heard of the submarine base, Fastnet? It's up that way. It's on Loch Long, that area. Straight across the Clyde from Greenock.
And you're ranked now. You're an aircraft from first class.
That's it.
And what you're a flight mechanic engines.
There's two flight mechanics. There's flight mechanic E, which is engines, and flight mechanic A, which is airframes.
Now, this isn't a training post. This is it.
This is it. I'm in the hot seat now.
Now, what did you think of getting sent to the Marine Aircraft Experimental Establishment? A bit of an interesting place to start.
Well, it was brilliant. It was brilliant.
You were pleased with the post?
Well, I was pleased for many reasons, actually, because it was non-operational unit. Not as I was too pleased about that, but that's beside the point. I know I couldn't be aircrew, so I could never be truly operational. But they were short of crew members. So they had pilots, and all the pilots they had were people that were from Bomber Command or other places that were had done their tour of duty on bombing and that sort of thing, and they were flying the airplane. All the navigators, all the people that were flying in that category were that, but they didn't have any air gunners or anything bloody like that, so they trained as air gunners. And when we used to go, just flying around Glasgow area, it didn't matter, we didn't go with them, but they used to do, part of the job was assessing the range of these aircraft. That was sort of an experimental unit, and it fitted different things. And had, as it so used to fly out into the Atlantic for 24 hours. Sometimes I've been out, and actually, no, 23 hours is the longest I've ever been out. Go out for 23 hours. Well, that means you've got a Sunderland or whatever the aircraft was out there totally defenceless without an air gunner. So we were trained as air gunners adequately, so I used to do air gunning there.
Now tell me how much training this air gunner they gave you. That was on post.
About 3 hours. And up in the hills above the cross name, they had a range there with a turret, so we fired the guns and we fired the turret there. And of course, the marvellous thing about it was I got paid a bob a day flying pay for doing it.
Now, what were these flights like? You say it was Sunderland the one you normally did, or was it anything else?
Well, I only went in the Sunderland. I flew in all the rest of them, but Sunderland was the only one that I used to go as an air gunner.
And what was the Sunderland like? I mean, it's a flying boat.
It used to be the Empire Flying Boats, didn't it? A luxury airliner. And of course, the other part, but that's a good laugh, that is, you go out for 20 hours was a regular trip, but you go out for all these times, so I took the grub with them, you see. Well, everybody soon found out that I was a cook. So I used to do all the cooking on the Sunderland. In fact, again, another one of these funny stories, or bullshit stories, which we like to put it, in Duxford, is the Sunderland I used to fly in.
Is that the actual one?
Yeah, the galley's still there that I used to cook in. Yeah, if you've been to Duxford. But we used to cook all sorts of stuff there.
How did you reckon that? It was just a number, I presume. It's got a number. Is that how you knew it was the one?
Yes, and I've got a number of it somewhere down, but that's why I know it, yeah. That's how I knew, because it's got its aircraft number. Yeah. What else?
Now, when you say as a cook, you were a baker, but that's a baker's cook,
I mean, God, in a bakehouse like that in Melton Mowbray, you cooked everything, bacon, sausages, pies, the lot. Because we've served the cafe as well, you see. So.
So you're acting as an air gunner and
cook. Yeah. And don't make too stress of the air gunner. I don't know what would have happened if I had to use them in anger. But that was the ploy, that they were short of air crew, so that obviously the navigators and the pilots, they had to be full time air crew.
And you enjoyed these flights?
I always go for it. Well, I went and joined the Air Force for a fly. It was absolute marvellous. It was heaven. Absolute heaven.
You didn't get bored?
Oh, no, I never did. Used to sit in the rear turret, quite happily sitting in there looking at the turret. When I say bored, you could get a bit bored if you're going out over the Atlantic. There was nothing. But most of the flying used to be around Scotland, you see. So I saw Scotland from the air. It was gorgeous.
And so, anything else? What's your real job? Isn't your real job, is it?
No, that's it. I was just doing it. I was a plant mechanic.
And what were your routine duties then there?
Engine inspections, oil changes, plug changes, filter changes, all this sort of stuff. Propeller changes, the total engine change, we need an engine change, fuel repair, fuel tank repairs, system repairs.
Did they have routine? I mean, in the army they have a sort of 5-day,
ten-week,
3-month system, you know.
Basically, you used to have a daily inspection. Every aircraft, every day, and it has to be signed for what you call the Form 700. I don't know if you've heard the Form 700.
So every aircraft was inspected every day?
Every day. That's a daily inspection. It couldn't go.
And that's the aircraft or the engine?
A lot. Every single thing of the aircraft is inspected every 24 hours. And then beyond that, there's been different systems, you know, weeklies, monthlies, hours. There's been all sorts of systems used all through the Air Force. Sometimes it's on hours flown, sometimes it's on calendar.
So you do the, and who would do the daily aircraft inspection? Would that be
me? I did the engines, and all of the mechanics did the rest of it, you see, wireless operators, everybody. I mean, it was never more 20 minutes, half an hour, that's all it took. But the aircraft couldn't fly without it couldn't fly without all the signatures in the book.
Even in wartime.
I'm not going to say if there'd been a flipping couple of ankles overhead that it wouldn't done, but even in a Battle of Britain, there's no argument about it. All the dailies they've done, they may have been a bit skimped, they may have done that, but they had to be done.
Now, so you're checking engines. You mentioned an engine track, so how do you do an engine track? I don't know whether you want to pick an aircraft you did it to, but how do you, it's such a big job. We civilians can't imagine how you do it. I mean, how do you change an engine?
Change an engine. No, that's that was my speciality. I used to give exhibitions on that at one time, me and my mate. No, it's basically an engine is made to be changed, you see. It started out in those days, you changed an engine, which was a bit difficult because there were lots and lots of bits to take off, but it's just disconnecting everything, taking it out, putting another one in.
Using block and tackle?
Block and tackle. I mean, in I got some pictures of the block and tackle on the Sunderland lifting the top. In fact, I got that about 3 years ago from a group captain at Brampton, because he had one in the flipping his office there, and I said, I've been looking for one of them for years, got all the stands and everything. And he gave me a copy of it. But
so you blocked and tackled it out, and then
that's the engine. Yeah, engine lifted it, dropped it down. Okay, if you got it, you could change the engine out on the water, which was unusual. He didn't used to do usually, but you could do if need be. You wouldn't bring it ashore just to change the engine. That's block and tackle. But if you're on shore, then you either had hanger cranes or coast cranes to lift out.
Now, any other duty things you'd have to do, you know, a routine or non-routine on the engines?
Well, basically, it was looking for oil leaks, fuel leaks, any pipelines that were chafing, anything that was not strictly right.
And oil and fuel, why are they so important? I think I can guess, but
well, an oil leak at 50,000, well, no, 10,000 feet, you don't have an engine for very much longer. it would seize up immediately, so you must keep
and
checking.
And a fuel leak would be?
Fuel leak would be even worse. You could fire and bang. So
I presume they could catch fire more easily than leaking.
Oh, by God, yes, if you're putting out fuel vapour. That's what causes it. This is why when you see these films, which again, a lot of it's fiction, I agree, but the bullet knocks a hole in something, but the next one sets fire to it, if it's fuel that's leaking. And then there, and you're in dead trouble.
But you were looking for things caused by abrasion or just...
Yeah, just general wear around, anything that weren't right, anything's not fitting properly.
Anything else you were particularly looking for?
Well, you used to have to do engine runs to check that the engine was working
now
properly.
What's an engine run?
Well, it's just you start the engine up and you go through a series of checks. You change the controls, like the mixture controls and all these seats, you get various readings from it, and maximum revs you can get out of it to make sure everything is working correctly. Oil pressures are correct and all of this. Really, it isn't very complicated, the daily inspection, isn't it? It's just looking for things that are going wrong.
Now, you mentioned some of the aircraft and engines that you had something to do with. You mentioned the Sunderlands. I don't know if there's any stories or things you've got about these. I mean, there's the Sunderland, the Walrus, the Float Spitfire. Mm-hmm. That's fairly unusual, although that's what they come from, isn't it, float plans?
Yeah.
Short Scion, I'm not... Martin Marinic, and then I think... Colorado Experimental Quarter Scale Shetland. Do you want to talk about any of these aircraft? Some of them are quite unusual.
Well, the quarter scale model ones, they were all checking out hull shapes.
Tell me about these, because I've only ever heard one of the first.
Well, the Short Scion, is a little four engine aircraft that's not normal, but this was mounted on a hull, literally a hull. What they were doing, they were checking the hull, getting the hull shape right for the Shetland, the flying boat, the Shetland, which you've probably heard of lately. Yes, it was a Shetland, yeah. And they were just checking these hull forms. You see, one of the big problems with any flying boat is getting the thing to what you call unstick, to get it off the water. Because the moment it starts to speed up, the suction of the water tries to pull it down. So all the power of your engine has got to be to break in that suction. So if you can assist the engine with breaking the suction in some other way by the shape, that's why flying boat hulls are shaped in a particular way, you get it lifted, you can have a greater payload onto the aircraft, which is really basically what it was all about.
And this is the Short Scion and the quarter scale Shetland.
Yeah.
They were both this... Basically, to check.
Yes, this is basically both of these were doing this whole shape. All the other things we were doing, things that, well, a little bit beyond me actually. I didn't, a lot of it, checking the electronics gear, you see, how they would operate in the air and all the rest of it.
What about the Spitfire float plane?
Was just checking the Spitfire out, see how it had handled on floats. It was to be a Spitfire was such a good aeroplane, and they were trying it out to see how it on floats.
Anything to report? I mean, did you discover anything about it? Or?
Well, I'm a flight mechanic. I don't know. All I did was put petrol in and do the inspections. No, I didn't know anything about it. I mean, you used to get boffins in these. These are all civvies. In fact, in the short Sion, one of the boffins there got killed, which should have been me, but that's beside the point.
What happened?
Well, in fact, I think if I'd have been on, I would have got out, but it was my job to fly with this thing, because I used to, when it went anywhere else, I used to have to refuel it, and I used to fly all over the place with it. And this time, they'd got a piece of gear in the middle, I don't know what they were doing with it, bolted it in the aircraft, and a boffin came with it, a young lad, boffin from Farnborough or somewhere, came with it in civvies and all the rest of it, and they went off, and during the flight, it crashed and killed, everyone just on board was killed. No, the pilot wasn't killed, the rest were killed. But as I say, normally that would have been me, but I don't think I would have. I think I'd have got out. I think it's poor young lad, and bloody clue what to do to get out. I mean, I knew which.
What do you mean you got out? I mean,
I'm sure I could have kicked my way out because he drowned. He went down with it. I'm sure I wouldn't. I mean, okay, that's probably being bullshitty, but that's what I think anyway.
So it ditched in the sea.
Yeah.